Please stand as you're able for the reading of the gospel, which today comes from the book of Luke, chapter 14, verses 25 through 33. Now large crowds were traveling with him, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost, to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he is able, with 10,000, to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000? If he cannot, then while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions." The reading of the gospel.
Well, it's always my pleasure to be in worship with you and to have the privilege of preaching, particularly, except for days like this when the gospel is so hard. If this is the job description of working for Jesus, I'm thinking not many people would apply for this job. There's some pretty rough language here. What's up, Jesus, with having to hate things like family and possessions and even life itself? I mean, hate? I thought Jesus was all about love. Who in the blue blazes is going to sign up for this? This is a terrible thing to put on the church sign. Give up everything. Renounce your possessions. Services at 8, 9:30. I can't put that in the Howard County Times. It's difficult to work this part in on the forms that we give our ELC parents or our Sunday school families or our VBS families, you know. Make a friend, sing some songs, learn colors and numbers and have a snack, and oh yeah, learn about cross-bearing too. It says in the beginning that Jesus started out with really large crowds. It doesn't say how large the crowd was when he got done with this little speech of his. I bet he thinned out the herd considerably. What is Jesus up to? Doesn't he know what we're up against as the church? This company that he founded, that we work for? Churches are downsizing all over the place. We've got to be relevant and friendly and attractional. We've got to compete with weekend kids football and soccer schedules. What's the use of planning icebreakers and ordering the donuts if this is the kind of message that I'm stuck with as your pastor? Honestly, people, if Jesus keeps this up, we're going to have to start raffling off honey-baked hams. And that's not a bad idea, and I want you to look up in the discipline to see if I can do it. People are not going to buy this message. Help me help you, Jesus, I want to say. Instead of writing the Gospels, could not your people have come up with an e-book that shows you how to lose 20 pounds in 30 days? That I could use and I could market. That's a win-win. Next thing you know, Jesus will be telling, he'll be telling us those who want to save their life have to lose it. And those who lose their life for his sake will find it. What is a marketing executive supposed to do with that? I know. And what is all this business about cost? If it costs so much to follow Jesus, I hope he's happy because I'm broke now. He just told me to give everything away. I don't have anything to pay him with. I hope he takes credit cards. I thought the poor were supposed to be blessed in the kingdom, and now it's all about cost. I'll admit, though, the part about sitting down and thinking about it first. You know, putting pen to paper. That's kind of appealing because it makes it seem like following Jesus is actually about something. Something that matters. Something that's important. It's like building a tower or going off to war. That's kind of appealing because at least something's at stake. You know, we're not just up here wasting our time. We're doing things that make a difference in the kingdom of God. We're introducing people to Jesus. We're being the body of Christ in the world. It matters. And who would want to make half a tower? What if that was your life's work, you know? And you go to heaven and it's like, I built half a tower and I ran out of bricks. And then, Lord, you called me home. You know, there's nothing worse than the few times a year that I realize how few home-baked goods I've actually made for my children. And then I have this moment of immense parental clarity, and I say, today's the day, kids. Mom's going to make cookies, you know, from scratch. And then I manage to get to the kitchen because I try to remember where that's located. And then I get the ingredients out and I get started. And inevitably, I get halfway through that thing and I have forgotten an essential ingredient, you know, something like sugar. That is really frustrating. At least Jesus is reminding us, you know, what we're doing is important. Let's count the cost. When I was in seminary, I was about 40 when I graduated, and there were a lot of youngins in seminary with me, and I do love me some youngins, all nothing but love to the people in the room. One of my friends was named Cody, and Cody was in his early 20s, and we were in a class called New Testament Greek together. And after about the third class, Cody comes up to me in the cafeteria, and I've got all my books lined up. I've got a fortress in place to study. And he comes up to me and he leans forward with his earnest little Midwestern face. And he says, this Greek class is really something. I'm like, yeah, it is. I have to study. You have to go. And then he says, it's almost like the professor expects us to learn Greek. And he's like, surely not, though, because that's hard. That's like impossible, learn Greek. I said, yeah, Cody, you know, I'm paying good money to learn Greek, so I really hope that in the end, I mean, there's something in it, but I think we do have to learn Greek. But look at it this way, brother. You were in a frat. You already know all the letters. It's not like it's Hebrew. I mean, learning Hebrew, that's something. The alphabet's different. You read the other way. This is just Greek. Cody was unconvinced. He said, look, there's no reason to ask this of me. I only want to be a youth pastor, for Pete's sake. That's real funny if you're not a youth pastor. But the point of the story is, sometimes you've got to count the cost, and isn't that a good thing? It wasn't Greek class that was Cody's trouble. The trouble started with Cody's baptism. When Cody's parents brought his little baby self to the font and said, this one is Christ's forever. Greek class was just that particular week's impossible task. I bet if I could bring Cody here, some people in this place would put a brotherly or sisterly arm around him and talk about what kind of impossible trouble following Jesus got them into. The finance people would talk about a capital campaign where God richly provided at the last possible second, and we got things paid. Somebody might put their arm around Cody and say, following Jesus took me into a hospital room where I heard Jesus' still small voice telling me to forgive my dying parent. You want to talk about impossible, Cody? That's harder than Greek. Somebody might have a testimony that says, following Jesus took me into my HR department where I quit my perfectly fine, high-paying job in favor of the work that God was calling me to do. Following Jesus called me, they might say, into the local school to read to children. Or they might say, following Jesus took them to downtown Baltimore on like a Tuesday night to help with our college and career prep program. They let me go down to check it out. So that's where Jesus put me on Tuesday night. It can happen to you. Following Jesus could lead you to prison to visit somebody there. It could lead you into a Bible study, maybe even a covenant study. Following Jesus can lead you onto a Habitat site, like we had this weekend with our Habitat for Humanity team. Following Jesus can lead you onto a plane that goes to the Bahamas or to Haiti to do mission with people. Following Jesus can lead you into a space to speak a word of hope to somebody who has depression so bad they don't think they want to live anymore. It matters. It's so important. Following Jesus, when he calls us to love and serve even the ones we don't feel like loving and serving. So if you've been paying attention the past ever, you know one of my themes that I like to get up and preach about or felt called to has to do with love of God and love of neighbor. If I see that one more time, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's just, I might as well have it tattooed, you know, love of neighbor. So I wanted 5 minutes to get away from love of neighbor, and I went to the store. It's not like I explicitly told Jesus to stay out. Maybe I'll try that next time. So I'm in the store, and I see somebody that has a t-shirt on. They're right in front of me. It says, love thy neighbor. And I went, oh, can I not get a quart of milk without having to love my neighbor? So I was like, okay, hit it. Whatever you got, just bring it. So sure enough, they turned around and there was the list. I'm sure you've seen it. Love thy neighbor. Here comes the list. Thy homeless neighbor, it said. Thy Muslim neighbor. Thy black neighbor. And I would add white, Latino, Asian, Native American. It was sort of implied. Then it said thy gay neighbor, thy straight neighbor, thy differently abled neighbor, thy immigrant neighbor, thy Jewish, Christian, and atheist neighbor. And then thankfully they ran out of cloth. I would add, love thy Republican and Democratic and independent neighbor. I would add, love thy Raven fan neighbor. That'll get a little cheer from you, but how about this one? Love thy Redskin fan neighbor. Love thy Pittsburgh Steeler fan neighbor. Temple, temple. New Testament Greek was just the start of Cody's problems. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Jesus expects so much of us. In that respect, he's just like his daddy, the one that brought you, "You shall have no other gods before me. And you shall not make for yourselves an idol, and love the Lord your God with your whole heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself." I hear echoes of these words hidden in the hardest parts of this message from Jesus. The part about hating families and giving away all our stuff is really about who our God is. It's about idolatry. It's about not worshiping our family or our stuff. Okay, consider family, because that's a tough one, right? Looking over here at the sweet family. For Jesus' culture, it would not be a surprise that you would honor kinship bonds, because family was all you had back then. It was the foundation on which society was built. Family ties meant everything, security and status. Of course you loved your family. If you didn't, you wouldn't survive. Families were not scattered. They didn't have Skype. Your family was the be-all and end-all of who you thought you were and all you thought you could be. Who you were called to love and who you were called to be responsible for and who would be responsible for you. Family, limited. Jesus comes in and redefines all of that. If we really go all in for our faith, we may realize that Christianity redefines family so that we can see that God's family is more than just biology. Maybe we can see each person for who they are as a child of God. Who is my mother and father and sister and brother, says Jesus. And he opens his arms wide and he says, whoever does the will of my Father in heaven. So who your family is gets massively expanded to include people who are not kin to you. People that you may not agree on everything with. People that you're on trustees with. People who sit in front of or behind you or around you in this service. When we meet Jesus, all those things are redefined. Jesus even changes how we are with the families we got. My baptism changes the kind of sister and wife and mother and aunt that I'm called to be. And if the people who live in my house, if they really belong to God and not to me, then that just increases the scope of the love and the grace that we can give. This is the judo of the Christian faith, losing your life to gain it. The more you love, the more love you have. So that's family. Now, how about our stuff? Our possessions. They too are gifts from God. They're not God. We cannot take one dime of our stuff into eternity. But once we give our lives to Jesus, and once we see that God is God and we are not and our stuff is not, we can use the blessings that God gives us to make a difference for Christ in the world. All our blessings and all the things and all the people we would love, they're gifts from God. Worship the giver. Give thanks for the gift, not the other way around. Now, on one level, this Jesus guy seems to want everything. Working for him seems like one heck of a job. And if we were to count the cost, we would say, it looks pretty pricey. Except for this. What if we considered the price of what we're already paying to people and places that aren't Jesus? We're all paying someone or something. We're all dedicating our lives to someone or something, and the cost for work to work for them is maybe more expensive. When you work for them, you get to make bricks without straw, like working for Pharaoh. You get to labor for that which doesn't satisfy. Turns out that when you really count the cost, there's no one else that's worth taking up your cross and following, except for Jesus. After working for all those Pharaohs out there, after chasing after the bottle or the brass ring of success, after trying so hard to save ourselves, after bowing down at so many other altars of fear and pleasure and anger and guilt and pain, it is exhausting. What a relief to kneel at the feet of the one who said, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." It's no wonder the hymn writer said, "You can have all this world, but give me Jesus." It's a no-brainer if you count the cost.